From the Lind Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of December, 2022. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Mike Zuzlo is out of the office this afternoon. A bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass will join us as usual from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible to talk about the weather forecast. And in between, I'll bring you up to speed on the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. These are the annual events that the agricultural economists have been doing on the road for a couple of decades now, and we're back out again this year, but not in December, not this month, but in January. You'll want to listen up and get yourself scheduled and registered for that event. That's coming up on the 10th, 11th, and 12th of the month, and you'll hear all about it on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. March corn settled the day at 6.53. That was down a half cent. The May futures a quarter lower at 6.53 and a half, and December at 5.97 and a half for next year, down a half cent. January soybeans at $14.80, up 6 and a half. The March 14.83 and three quarters, 7 higher. And November beans up 1 for the new crop at $13.89 and a quarter. Bean meal up $7.70. The bean oil down 46 cents on the day. Wheat futures were 3 3/4 lower for the soft red March at 7.53 and a half, and the hard red March at 844, down 16 and a half cents. Live cattle futures 92 and a half cents higher. Feeders up 2 and a half cents, and lean hogs were $4.12 and a half cents higher today. Naomi Bloom now joins us from Total Farm Marketing to take a look at what happened on this Friday at the CME Group in Chicago. Hi, Naomi. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for filling in today, too.
Yes, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here. What did happen in Chicago?
You know, just a real quiet day, which, you know what, that's all right, because there's been a lot of market shenanigans happening around it, with the dollar, you know, having a return higher after the Fed announcements, and with the stock market crashing lower. Crude oil was down a little bit. So the fact that corn finished the day pretty much unchanged from yesterday's close, beans finished about 5 or 6 cents higher, wheat's going to finish unchanged pretty much, I think that's a really good signal. It feels like the market is content to just dig in its heels here. I feel like we found a holiday low. And for the corn, soybean, and wheat market, there is a seasonal tendency for prices to actually just nudge higher into the new year. And then at some point in January, February, we reach our winter high. And that'll be a good opportunity for farmers to get current with old crop sales and then really hammer away with new crop sales also.
How often does the corn market move higher during this time of year?
So actually, good question. I did some research on March corn futures, and 15 out of the last 15 years, March corn futures have worked higher after the December USDA report into January. You know, it wasn't straight up. There were some years where it went down a little bit first and then went higher. But 15 out of 15 years, it does go higher into January. And the average rally of those 15 years is 47 cents. Some years where the carryout has been tight, the rally is more than 47 cents. And then in those years where corn prices were just in the pit of despair, you didn't really see much of a rally, maybe 5 cents or so. But it's encouraging, you know, with our ending stock still so tight, it makes me feel like the market has the ability to, you know, to push higher into the new year. Of course, past performance, not indicative of future results, but boy, 15 out of 15 years is pretty, you know, something to be talking about. But again, for farmers, make sure you're using that Christmas rally or New Year rally to be thinking about your cash sales.
In January, of course, USDA releases the final crop production figures along with WASDE numbers for the month and the grain stocks figures. Which of those will you be watching closely?
Oh my goodness, all of them. They're going to be able to move so many different notches on the supply and demand reports on production numbers, you know, from the past year. So every category counts. Every line item needs to be scrutinized, because that really helps to set the tone for the next coming year. You know, we know that we've got 9 grain and oilseed commodities that still have tight ending stocks. But we're also in a situation now, which is different than last year, where all of the powers that be in the world are going to do their best to try to keep demand from really growing higher. just in an effort to keep prices in check. So you've got that kind of negative influence hanging over the market with the reality of tight supplies, and then it's up to Mother Nature as far as what 2023 is going to bring for prices. So that's why I think we want to encourage producers to have more of a traditional mentality or approach with marketing, where be aware of those seasonal tendencies and, you know, don't just store and ignore and assume things are going to just go racing higher again. The fact that the interest rates are going up and are expected to continue to go up in 2023 is just really something to be aware of.
To the point that producers need to manage risk for both old and new crop?
Yes, very much so. Be focused with grain in the bin. Of course, monitor your basis levels. There's going to be a lot of grain that gets moved after the first of the year, so we could see basis levels widen out for a little while. And with the new crop, you know, we're going to see most likely a push higher, and you're going to be at a point where you've got some profitable sales. So be aggressive with locking in cash sales, and then really start to think about protecting unpriced bushels. Because again, for prices to go, you know, screaming higher from these levels, it's going to take bad weather in Brazil or in Argentina, further bad weather. We would need to see the additional demand coming in for the United States for exports. And we all know our corn exports are just lagging right now. So there's a lot of things that would have to perfectly align to make those market prices just scream higher. So I think switch the mentality this year to a little bit more cautious, be very business-minded, be aware of the profits that are in front of you. You know, it's not normal for bull markets to last more than a couple years, historically speaking. So again, the only thing in my opinion right now that would make the markets just go tremendously higher would be if there was bad weather in South America or something negative to happen to our weather in the United States this coming spring and summer.
Well, on that note, the market has come to grips and the supply chain has changed how it works as it's related to the war in Russia and the movement of grain across the planet?
Yes, there's been a lot of changes from the standpoint of, I think, larger corporations out there are doing their best to be able to secure product from all ends of the earth as they are able to, or to be aware of where they can get product from and not just be reliant on one or two sources for commodity or grain food sources. So you're going to, it's not that the United States is going to lose, you know, a tremendous amount of business, but you are going to see other countries, I think, open up and have the ability to where they're going to maybe try to grow more grains or different types of grains so they can be part of the network now. And you're going to see, I think, some of those other corporations start to buy small amounts from those new sources. So that'll be a little bit different. As far as the just-in-time freight mentality goes, you know, I'm not sure. I don't really envision big corporations like making their own storage facilities so they can have product, but I think they're going to be very much more in tune with things than years past and not just rely on the ease that had been there to have large supplies of grain or commodities whenever they need it. So it was a huge wake-up call. Globalization, I think, is going to be shifting and changing now, which was so interesting because when I got my master's certificate in global education, you know, globalization was such the big buzzword. And I just remember thinking in my classes, I wonder how long this is going to last. But we found out the answer to that. So the world is always shifting and changing. The demand, though, for grains for the United States, I think, is going to be there. But I'm curious to see how much more demand will grow from where we are right now, especially with those interest rates staying at high levels and probably going to be staying at high levels for another year or two.
Thank you, Naomi. Naomi Bloom is with Total Farm Marketing, online at totalfarmmarketing.com. Well, the winter meeting season is well underway. Of course, thank you to all of those who came to our Farm Assets Conference back on the 21st day of November, and to those who were at the CCA conference yesterday. And looking forward into January, there are three events that I want you to put on your calendar. They're all the same, so you'll pick one of these. But the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, that's the IFAS meetings with the Farm Doc team, the agricultural economists from the University of Illinois, will be out and about across the state this year in person, and you can come and visit with us. We'll be in Mount Vernon on the 10th day of January at the Doubletree. On Wednesday, we'll be at the Paradise in East Peoria. That's January the 11th. And on Thursday, January 12th, we'll visit Ferrandas in DeKalb, Illinois. Again, that's the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. The summits, of course, have moved from the month of December to January, and you can join us in person. The members of the Farm Doc team from the Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics and University of Illinois Extension will hold that series of three Illinois Farm Economic Summit meetings to help producers understand the past year and plan for next year. Do plan to join us for the long-awaited return of these in-person IPAS meetings. Again, we'll be in Mount Vernon, Peoria, and DeKalb. All the information is on the FarmDoc website. It's on the homepage at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, or look under webinars and IPAS. You'll be able to register. The cost is $80 online, $85 if you mail it in, and $90 for walk-in. The fee includes all the meeting material, the break refreshments, and of course lunch. This program is a morning program only. It starts early in the morning around 8 o'clock. I haven't quite seen the start time just yet, and we'll finish up at the noon hour with your meal. Registration is open now for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Again, you can do that online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look under webinars and IFAS, and of course I'll put a link at willag.org as well.
This is Mark Schleusener, State Statistician for Illinois, with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. On December 15, NAS released the statistics for wheat county estimates in Illinois and around the country. Here are some highlights for the Prairie State. As usual, Washington County led the way with 62,700 acres of wheat planted and total production of 4.6 million bushels. Randolph and Perry counties placed second and third in total production of wheat in 2022. Farmers in each of those counties produced more than 2 million bushels of wheat. In terms of yield per acre, the state average tied the record high at 79 bushels per acre, and nine counties had average yields that exceeded 90 bushels per acre. The highest average yield in the state goes to Logan County at 102.5. Ogle and Gallatin counties followed closely behind at more than 97 bushels per acre. County estimates for wheat and other commodities are available on the internet at www.nass.usda.gov/IL. Then click on County Estimates. In other news, on December 15, NAS published the results of the 2021 Organic Survey. In Illinois, there were 354 certified organic farms with more than 100,000 organic acres. Those farms produced $127 million in total organic sales for Illinois. Organic crop sales accounted for more than $107 million, while livestock, poultry, and livestock and poultry product sales accounted for nearly $20 million. One more thing, NAS has received more than 9,000 Census of Agriculture reports for Illinois so far, and many of them were submitted on the internet. Thank you very much. I would also like to thank the NASDA enumerators that help us with data collection for many projects. The staff of NAS truly appreciates your cooperation and your efforts. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
Let's check the weather forecast on this Friday afternoon. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass, as usual. He's with Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here again.
Hey, by the way, your colleague, Andrew Pritchard kicked off the CCA conference yesterday at the iHotel here in Urbana-Champaign. I was hosting that event and did a great job. Andrew has deep roots with WILL AM 580, my home station. His father worked there, and meteorologist Ed Keezer was not quite his mentor, but got him really interested in the weather. So I appreciate that, too. He's really good at what he does, like you. But I just wanted to give him a nod, I suppose.
I get to talk to him every day, so I feel privileged. He's a smart kid and a smart young man. He does a great job with forecasting, and I've really enjoyed working with him at Nutrien Ag Solutions.
Ed and I had a discussion about that because Ed and I remember when he was born. and think of him as a kid, but he is in his 30s.
I know, yeah. He's a grown man. I just, ever since I got to know him, you know, he would have been a student when I was a professor. And so I keep him young in my head. But he's a brilliant scientist, tons of experience, and he knows Illinois weather better than most people I know.
He's fantastic. Speaking of weather, there's been a big storm that's come across the United States, for the better part of a week, maybe longer. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, so this large upper-level low that's just spinning today over the Great Lakes, it entered the United States last Friday night in California. So just to give you a recount, this thing put 4 feet of snow in the Sierra Nevada. It produced nearly 80 tornadoes across the South as it was rolling through Texas all the way over to Mississippi and Alabama. It dumped a bunch of rain on the Mississippi Valley. In fact, the Mississippi River is now up above low stage for the first time since, the beginning or the end of September. And we got rain here that soaked into ground that was unfrozen. That was all good. But on the northern side of it, we're now in day five of having blizzard warnings somewhere in the northern plains. And today it's a ground blizzard that they're concerned about with 30 to 40 mile an hour winds. And this system won't get to Maine until Sunday night. So it's been a long time since I've seen such a slow moving storm system across the country, but it's been cut off from all the main flow of the atmosphere. So it just sits there and spins. But we did get the benefit of it in terms of that rainfall that just came through. I love what that's going to do overall to our drought picture going forward. So good storm system for the health of our soil. Rough storm system to kind of live through.
I keep hearing the Beatles song 8 days a week because it's just been.
My daughter's a huge Beatles fan,
and I want to know through that 8 days, did it have any real impact on drought areas? Meaning, who got moisture and who didn't?
Well, I mean, it will show up on the drought monitor, but not until next week. And the reason for that is because the drought monitor is produced on Tuesday, released to the public on Thursday, which means it didn't account for a lot of the precipitation that fell. And like I said, this system was fantastic for the Midwest, given that it put down all of that rain on unfrozen soil. And trust me, this soil is going to get frozen in a hurry before Christmas. So that's moisture we get to keep and lock into the system for much of winter. So this is going to be a good one that, when we look at it in retrospect, was great to work on our drought issues.
What about next week? You mentioned cold.
Yeah, I'm not excited about this. We are right now watching a large ridge build into Alaska that's going to set up over the Chukchi Sea, which is in the Arctic. That means whatever's in the Arctic has got to go somewhere. It's going to go first to British Columbia. It's then going to go to Alberta and Saskatchewan. It'll then enter Montana, the Dakotas, then goes into Iowa and Illinois. And what I'm talking about here is temperatures that at some point next week, probably next Thursday into Friday, we could be looking at temperatures 20 to 30 degrees below normal. And therefore, there might be a couple of days in there where our high temperatures struggle to get out of the single digits. When as you go farther north and west of here, they'll be looking at high temperatures in that minus 10 to minus 20 degree range. This is a substantial colder outbreak. On the leading edge of it, we may get some snow that comes through here. So if anybody listening is looking forward to a white Christmas, we just really increase the odds of that, given that this colder outbreak's coming through. The big problem, I just think, in terms of the fact that it's coming right before Christmas, is what it might do if it gets to the East Coast and develops into a large East Coast winter storm. If it hits on Friday or Saturday before Christmas, we will be looking at a massive travel disruption. But this one is going to be bringing in some of the coldest air we've seen around here in a long time. I wouldn't be surprised if it continues on its current trajectory. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some of these temperatures approaching record cold.
You make me hopeful for a January thaw at this point.
You know what's funny is we have January thaws almost every single year. It's pretty rare that we stay that whole month with freezing temperatures, so we'll get one. And the good news is I think the pattern will bounce back after this. But what I don't see, and I completely agree with the Climate Prediction Center on this, I don't see a slow pattern as we go into January. I think it's going to be a winter, as you and I have been talking about, that gets going and stays going. And as a result, it is going to be something that will be very important for us come spring. Now, we're not going to like it. It's not comfortable. But by the time we get into spring, our drought air will be reduced. Good hard freezes followed by thaws on the soil are good for compaction issues. We're going to be looking pretty darn good going into spring, given the current setup into this winter. So I like it, but like I said, I'm not going to like living through it.
Is this because the La Nina is changing?
It kind of is. We think that the La Nina right now is reaching a peak. We expect that once we get into the new year, it's going to start to fade. And if it does begin to fade, that will be important to let some other, what we call sub-seasonal things take over, like the MJO or any sense of north latitude blocking, which sets us up for, a good winter with lower risk of having winter time drought develop. But if that La Nina fades into spring, that's when things get very interesting for us, because while it will eliminate drought, historically La Ninas tighten up our spring planting windows a little bit with extra precipitation. Not the cold side of things, but the extra precipitation that sometimes chases us out of the fields. So there's some give and take with it. But overall, we would all like to see La Nina gone into 2023, because historically, El Nino events tend to deliver better summer moisture with less risk of extreme heat. So this is overall a pretty favorable outlook in the longer term that the La Nina begins to fade in January.
It has an impact in the Northern Hemisphere and in the Southern Hemisphere. I'd be amiss if I didn't ask you about the production areas in Argentina and Brazil.
Yeah, well, the strength of this La Nina this fall has really been impactful on, on the Argentinian drought. And over the next 15 days, we see more dry, warm days in Argentina than we do any chance of precipitation. So the problem there becomes the already longstanding drought is not going to get any better. There's dryness in southern Brazil, not necessarily a major concern yet, because it's just regional. But northern Brazil, over the next 10 to 15 days, in a surplus of rainfall, that's going to get this soybean crop to finish on a big note. The numbers could be quite large from north central Brazil, likely be able to carry the deficits in southern Brazil and Argentina. But here's the last thing. If La Nina fades hard going into like February or March, all of a sudden the risk for drier March and April in northern Brazil starts to increase. And that's where we'll have a safrinha crop, which will be mostly corn. So there's still plenty in the table that can shift around. But we're going to have to be watching this carefully over these next several weeks.
We'll keep checking in with you. Thank you much.
Yeah, you bet.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Acrible joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Stay with us. Commodity Week is coming up next.